Well, make sure your cell phones and Blackberries and all eye gadgets are turned off, because it would really be humiliating today to have the electronic leash start tugging at you as we contemplate this classic story of doing many tasks in the world versus just being and sitting and resting in the presence of God. Well, you all must have figured this one out to some extent because you're here. And you're not at home or at the office or on the electronic leash or doing what needs to be done. And I'm sure everyone came here with a couple things they could have gotten done around the house or a few things that might get you ahead before you get to work tomorrow. But you're here. Good for you. So you don't need a sermon about slowing down, about letting go of tasks, about not making ourselves do so much. You know, it's really not news, this story about Mary gaining more by just sitting at Jesus' feet listening than Martha would gain by her many tasks and serving and working and doing everything she was doing. I mean, has anybody not seen a magazine or a website or an article or something urging us to slow down, to take me time, to stop and smell the roses, you know, how to get a little quiet time in your life? Has anybody not talked to friends about, I have too much to do? One of my friends at work has a mug that says, stop me before I volunteer again. You know, we talk about workaholism. We talk about the guilt and the envy that ensues from just slowing down and doing nothing in a world that seems to demand that we be productive all the time. I read an article recently or heard something recently about a single working mother with 6 kids. She said, oh, I know how to get me time. Whenever I need some quiet time, I schedule dental work. I thought, she's not clear on the Martha Mary concept. No, so none of you out there go, oh, yeah, gee, I didn't think of that. You know, I could go to the dentist this week and everybody will leave me alone. You know, this is just, it's just not news, this whole story and this message. But what I thought about in contemplating this story and in thinking about all of this in my own life, it's really hard to just stop. It's really difficult, really hard to just sit at Jesus' feet and listen. You know, Mary didn't figure out a new system of being in how many steps, or she didn't get enlightened, she didn't learn something, she didn't grow, she didn't have an aha experience or lose 10 pounds or achieve any next level. She didn't conquer anything or repent, restore, regenerate. She just sat there listening at Jesus' feet. It's really hard. There's been a lot written in Western tradition about what an arduous task it is to, as Stephen Mitchell said, come to the center of the universe and rest in perfect love. I mean, it seems like what we would all want to do. The psalm resonates, I rest in perfect love. I come to the center of the universe. I sit with God. This is what we hope for, what we try to find in a quiet sanctuary. But the early desert fathers of the 2nd and 3rd century, who left the world and went out into the desert to do nothing but pray, noticed how hard it was to just sit at Jesus' feet and listen. They were the ones, first ones who wrote of the noonday demon, which kind of came upon them, the tendency to become distracted in midday from devotion that began at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. This spiritual state of really just not being able to sit and rest. You're distracted. You want to get something done. Your mind is doing what I call the hamster wheel, going around and around. You know, you've got something you need to get done. Spiritual state of not being able to just sit and rest was called acedia, which is literally not caring. It's like accident, acedia. One monk wrote of how it felt with his lifetime devotion and efforts to rest in God's presence. He described it as tedium or perturbation of heart, boredom with one's cell, scorn and contempt for one's brethren, a feeling of inertness. And the desert monks suggested manual labor, especially basket weaving, as an antidote to this spiritual lethargy. So they wrote quite about it, even in very early years. before they were bombarded with the stimuli we have today. No wonder Martha was so concerned with the kitchen chores. So, and this whole state of acedia eventually became the deadly sin of sloth. And then our whole work ethic society conspired and evolved to identify just sitting, opening, daydreaming, staring into the sky as lazy and unproductive. The big 19th century philosophers weighed in on all of this as well, this conflict between spiritual stillness and our seemingly wired-in urge to motion and activity. Pascal writes, "Man finds nothing so intolerable as to be in a state of complete rest, without passions, without occupation, without diversion, without effort. Then he feels his nullity, loneliness, inadequacy, dependency, helplessness, emptiness. And at once there wells up from the depths of his soul boredom, gloom, depression, chagrin, resentment, and despair." Quite a state. No wonder we don't sit still. Kant wrote of a dread of the void. Schopenhauer speaks of the anguish of longing without an object. Kind of, you want to do something, but you don't quite know what. Longing without an object. And the contemporary spiritual writer Kathleen Norris sees our hyper-paced, overstimulated world as a reaction to the immense difficulty of just sitting and listening and being open to the presence of God. She describes our nonstop, adrenaline-fueled hamster wheel world as spiritual morphine, something that numbs us to the pain of separation from God. I think that's interesting. There's, on one hand, there's sort of the boredom of just sitting there, but then there's also a boredom of keeping ourselves so filled and so many balls up in the air that we can't even think. And we certainly can't pray or be receptive in that state. This simple stopping and sitting and opening to the presence of the divine is the very foundation of Buddhist practice. They go on silent retreats that last for 3 years, 3 months, and 3 days. And then they have to get reincarnated because it takes more than a lifetime to even begin to get good at this. So this is bigger than just a suggestion to carve out a little more me time during the week or see if you can kind of let go of a few tasks or delegate them somewhere else so that you can get a little quiet time. We do seem very hardwired to get busy and get something accomplished. I don't know, I suppose it has to do with maybe saber-toothed tigers, you know, ate all the ones of us that sat still, and so those of us who could keep busy kind of kept in the world. I don't know. Well, Swedenborg writes a lot about this dynamic between our inner and our outer worlds in a variety of contexts. He writes of inner worship and how we prepare our souls to receive life and faith from God. And he contrasts this with outer worship, which is what we do, the rituals, the prayers, the things we do, the things we say, outer ways that we reflect that and express our relationship with God. But he writes about the importance of inner worship, of just cultivating that ground. He says, "What is good and true in the genuine sense are found more in the inward plane or more inward conscience. For good and truth flowing in from the Lord are what activates this conscience. By the more interior plane, the Lord governs those who are made new." On the importance of this inner life, Swedenborg writes, "It is generally recognized that what is outside us cannot control what is inside us, but what is inside can control what is outside." Now, I could probably argue with that, but that's going to be another sermon. Gives me another idea there. He also writes, "Details of faith drawn from the word of the Lord have to be planted in the mind of a spiritual person so that the intellectual aspect of the mind receives instruction. But as long as the mind is overflowing with false ideas, true ideas of faith cannot take root, even though they have been planted there. So indeed, this is a church that focuses on cultivating and nourishing an attention to the inner life, on valuing the space that we create to let God in. It's not a church that's heavily tied to sacraments, rituals, the things that we do and say, the prayers that we need to say. It's not so focused on that. It's more focused on the inner life. And it would be a lot easier if someone could just tell us what prayers to pray and what rituals to engage in, or even if those 10 ways to simplify your life actually worked. It's easier to memorize all the rosary prayers and the Our Fathers and the Glory Bes and the Fatima prayers, and there's five each of four mysteries, and you say the Joyful Mysteries on Mondays and Saturdays and the Luminous Mysteries on Thursdays and the Sorrowful Mysteries on Tuesdays and Fridays. Wednesdays and Sundays you say the Glorious Mysteries, unless it's Lent or Holy Week and there's a whole new routine. It's complicated, but it would be easy if that's all it was. The silence is very simple, but extremely difficult. But that's what I love about this church, is the invitation to prepare our inner selves to meet God. But that's what it's based on. That call to clear the ground, pull the weeds, get the junk and clutter out of the corners, open our hearts and minds and hands and just wait. And God will be made visible through us and through each of us differently. This will be different for each person here, and it will be different for each of us at different stages in our lives. This life and throughout all eternity. We just need to think about how we prepare our inner lives. Now, Swedenborg waxes pretty eloquent about the importance of preparing the inner life to receive, but he doesn't give us much in the way of how-tos. And don't think I'm about to come up with a dandy, easy list of here's how you do it. Besides, you know how this works. Nature, prayer time, yoga, long walks, journaling, music, art, time with the people we love most. When we're fed up with the people, time with our dogs and cats. And, let's be honest, we all know that church and the Bible are not the only ways to feel God in the world, and not even always the most powerful. There are many, many ways to prepare the ground for divine seeds. As the 13th century poet Rumi says, there are 1,000 ways to kneel and kiss the ground. So this important spiritual task, this fundamental first step that is making our inner selves ready to receive, is different for each of us. It'll change at different times in our lives. But I believe it starts not with the church or with the Bible or even with nature or yoga or all that we do to calm ourselves and create peace in our lives, but with silence. We're led to those things that shape us and guide us and heal us and nourish us. We're led to those things from a place of stillness and silence and expectant waiting, like Mary. So I'd like to close with a poem from a 20th century Norwegian poet. I got this from a compendium of poetry that Robert Bly edited, and I hadn't heard of this guy before. His name is Rolf Jacobsen. Lived, I think, about 1904 to the maybe 80s or 90s of the 20th century poet. The silence afterwards. Try to be done now with deliberately provocative actions and stale statistics, brunches and gas ovens. Be done with fashion shows and horoscopes, military parades, architectural contests, and the rows of triple traffic lights. Come through all that and be through with getting ready for parties and 8 possibilities of winning on the numbers, cost of living indexes, and stock market analyses. Because it is too late. It is way too late. Get through with and come home to the silence afterwards that meets you like warm blood hitting your forehead and like thunder on the way and the sound of great clocks striking that make the eardrums quiver. Because words don't exist any longer. There are no more words. From now on, all talk will take place with the voices that stones and trees have. The silence that lives in the grass, on the underside of every blade, and in the blue spaces between the stones. The silence that follows shots and bird songs. The silence that pulls a blanket over the dead body and waits in the stairs until everyone is gone. The silence that lies like a small bird between your hands, the only friend you have. How do you prepare your inner life to receive divine light? I think the silence opens an infinity of secrets. Amen.